So in this text called Kaivalya Upanishad, which is related to meditation, the student approaches the teacher, and that is how one should be. The teacher should not go around trying to convert people, but if somebody is really interested, if the student is sincere, then the teacher should answer. And so he says, I want the highest knowledge which will take me beyond all the sorrows of this world. And the teacher says, Shraddha, Bhakti and Dhyana. Shraddha means faith accompanied by right knowledge. Bhakti means love, love for the knowledge and love for God, and meditation. So he says, prior to meditation, you should study the Vedanta, study the Upanishads, study what meditation is and what meditation is not, because a lot of us read some book or watch a video and then we sit down and chanting Om and trying to quieten the mind, and that is good, nothing wrong with that. But then what do I do with the quiet mind? That we shall cover. Before we start the subject of meditation, there are three steps we have to practice. First is called Shravanam. Shravanam means listen. Listen to the words of the scriptures from the teacher, read the books, and gain the right knowledge. And what is the right knowledge? We have talked many times, but it's good to keep repeating. I am not this body. I am the Om, the Spirit, the Brahman, the consciousness. The teacher has told us, the scriptures have told us, but I have my doubts. How can I be this, you know, this all-pervading spirit, that all Brahman that extends from here to the heavens and to the end of the universe? I can't be that. I'm this limited, ignorant, you know, useless, limited creature. So that's when you do mananam, you contemplate, you think about it. The teacher has said, the books have said, but I don't feel it. I don't think so. Or I'm not convinced. And so you have to have faith in the teaching, love for the teaching, and then sit and discuss. So group like this, where we sit and discuss, the whole book actually talks about who am I, and that I am not this body. The entire text is going to cover that in a lot of detail. So I have faith, and then I sit down and discuss, and we remove our doubts. Or you contemplate within yourself, and you say, you know, they say, I am not this body, I am the spirit. And then you say, well, from childhood, I remember my childhood, I remember my youth, I remember my middle age, I remember. So who is that I that remembers? I even remember what I did at age 5 or 6. So in that way, you remove your doubts. And then the third is, that's when you sit for meditation. So after having listened, after having no doubts, if somebody tells you, are you this body or are you the spirit? You should say, I am that Brahman, I am that spirit, I am not this body, I am occupying this body. And why do we need to listen again and again? Because in our mind, I am convinced that I am of this body, I am this man or woman. Like when I am dreaming at night, and if you are a woman, do you dream as a man or a woman? When you are dreaming, you dream of yourself as a woman, not as a man, right? Or if you are a man, you dream. Or if somebody wakes you up in the middle of the night and says, who are you? You will tell your name, Barbara or Anil or whatever my name is. But it should become that clear that I am not this. That is not my, the name is something I have been given. My sex, my body, my name, everything is the BMI. That has been given to me. And that is my equipment. But I am that spirit. That should be perfectly clear. Then you still have this erroneous notion that I am this body, and meditation is meant to remove that erroneous notion and to firmly establish and abide in the thought that I am that spirit. So these three steps one has to follow. You have to read, you have to discuss, you have to contemplate, and then you have to abide. That means throughout the day, the undercurrent should be that I am the spirit occupying this body. That should become your And then such a person, you know, can function in the world without being affected by likes and dislikes. So now we'll just do the verse. This particular verse may be basic for all of you because all of you have been meditating on a regular basis, but it is still good because the teacher just wants us to revise what is meditation. So it's verse number 5 in page 23 in your book. I'll chant and you can repeat after me. Vivikta deshe cha, sukhasanastah, shuchi, samagriva, shira sharirah. Yeah, we are on page 23, verse number 5. Atyashramastah, sakalendriyani, nirudhya bhaktya, swagurum pranamya. I think this is all we'll be able to do today. The last line we'll cover next week. So let us translate. Vivikta deshe, that means in a quiet place, in a secluded place. Sukhasanastha means in a comfortable posture. We'll go into detail each one of these. Shuchi means pure, clean place. Sama, griva, shira, sharira. So the griva means the neck, shira means the head and body. So head, neck and body should be in one straight line. Atyashramastha, ashrama is the four stages of life. Four stages, so I should be in the last stage when I sit for meditation. Sakalendriyani niruddhya, controlling all the sense organs and organs of action. Bhaktya, with devotion. Swagurum pranamya, I bow down to my guru. So let us take each thing. First is vivikta deshe. Vivikta deshe means in a secluded place. So meditation should be done in a secluded place. You should not be doing it in a football stadium where, you know, UCLA is playing Stanford and the two teams are, you know, on the field and the crowd is screaming. Then you are sitting and trying to chant Om, it's not going to work. So it should be in a quiet place at home and a quiet time. Where that time is very important, it should be a quiet time. That means pick a place in your house where you won't be disturbed. You know, it should not be on the main road. You know, if your room is facing the street, maybe pick one of the back rooms. Pick a time when there is not much traffic. Turn off your cell phone. And if there is a lot of disturbance going on in the house, people are getting ready for school and children are getting ready and husband has to be made breakfast, then that's not the time to meditate. You know, go ahead and let the children go to school, give them the breakfast, let the husband go. So it should be a quiet time and a quiet place. Also, it should not be where you are rushed. You know, don't have something on the fireplace, a pot, you know, a pressure cooker, and in 10 minutes it's going to start, you know, beeping, and so I have to quickly meditate. No, it should be a quiet time, a quiet place where you won't be disturbed, where at that moment you have no other responsibilities to meditate. So pick a right place and a right time where things are, you will be not disturbed, and comfortable posture. That's very important. Some people try to sit in that yogi posture, you know, with the lotus. That, you know, if you can do that for 20 or 30 minutes, that's great. But if you can't do it, nowadays most of us don't have, you know, the ability to sit like she's sitting, but which is good. But a lot of us are not able to sit in that posture for 20 or 30 minutes. If you can, that's very good. If not, you know, you can sit in a chair as long as your back is erect. Head, neck and back should be in one straight line, because then only your body should be erect, not stiff, but it should be erect, where the posture is straight and where your body is, so that you don't fall asleep. Because the problem with meditation is that we fall asleep. The moment you get in a comfort, then people ask, you know, can I meditate while standing? Can I meditate while walking? Can I meditate while lying down? We say in the beginning, it's a good idea to sit, because this walking meditation, though some of the Buddhists and some of the teachers do say that, but I find that it is very difficult when you're walking on the street and the traffic is coming and, you know, I mean, it's a lot of noisy. And also when you lie down and meditate, you have a tendency to fall asleep. So because after the yoga class, when you have taught the students, you find that within, at the end of the class, you do the Shavasana, and people just start snoring. So it should be done, yeah. And also you should have had a good night's sleep. You should have had a good night's sleep. Your mind should be at rest. Then they say the shuchi, the place and mind should be clean and pure, and that's very important. Of course, nowadays we don't have a problem. Our houses are clean. But this instruction was given for people who were meditating in the forest or somewhere in the mountain or in the monastery. They wanted to be sure that there were no flies or bugs or, you know, the place should be clean. But here, you know, most of our homes are pretty clean, so that's not so much a problem. More important is cleanliness and purity of the mind. Because in meditation, there are two kinds of disturbances. One is from outside, like we said, the TV or the cell phone or somebody talking in the house. But more important is the inner disturbances from the mind. And where do these inner disturbances come? Why does my mind run during meditation? Because there are too many vasanas. There is too much negativity. Either I'm angry with somebody or you know, jealous of somebody, or somebody has said something, I'm not happy, or I have a lot of desires. So when I sit for meditation, I should have no desire. I am just a seeker of truth. And I should slowly try to eliminate things like anger, greed, jealousy, hatred, arrogance. You know, talking about anger reminds me of a story. There was this lady who was very upset because she had gone through a divorce and her husband had a very good lawyer and he cheated her out of most of what she deserved. So she was very angry at her husband and she was walking along the beach, you know, kicking the rocks and kicking the shells. And there came an old lamp, you know, in the waves, and she kicked that also. And as it rubbed, out came a genie. So the genie says, why are you kicking the lamp? You know, you woke me up. She said, well, I'm angry at my husband. He cheated me. So what's the matter? So she tells him, you know, everything happened. So he says, you know, I can do one thing. I can give you whatever three wishes you want. But my condition is that whatever I give you, your husband will get 10 times. So she says, okay, get me $1 million. So immediately there's two bagfuls of $100 bills, $1 million. So you know what? Your husband got 10 million. So then she gets even more angry. Then she says, get me a mansion on the beach. So beautiful mansion appears on the beach. And there are 10 more mansions appear. She says, you know, your husband got those 10 mansions. Now she's even more upset. So she thinks for a while and says, you know, let me deliver twins. Oh. Let me have twins. So anger makes you upset. So when you are in that kind of a mood, you cannot meditate. So I should be in a calm mood. I should quieten the mind. I should ask the Lord for His grace and for His love. And so my attitude should be peaceful and quiet. And head, neck, and back should be in one straight line. Samagriva Shira Sharira, so that way I'm not like a question mark, you know, leaning or moving. Again, the movement should be to a minimum. And then he says, Atyashramastha, means the last stage of life. What do they mean? You can only meditate in the last stage of life? He says, Atyashramastha. So we can understand what are the four ashramas or the four stages of life that we all go through. The first 25, our rishis have divided life into 100 years, assuming You live 100 years, but the first 25 years is called Brahmacharya or the student life, where at that time you should be studying, your main focus should be studying, and you should have sense in indulgences to a minimum, which of course nowadays they don't follow. Kids get pregnant at age 12 and 13. So, but originally that was the teaching, that for the first 25 years, your job is to study and be good at what you do. So be the best student you can be and learn the maximum. Then the next 25 years, this is approximate, is the grihastha or the householder. And most of us are in that stage, householder, or some of us may be retired. But in the householder stage, what is my duty? What is my responsibility? I have already studied. So I have a job, I have a profession, so I do my profession. And a householder's job is to, of course, have family, have children, take care of the children, and make sure they are studying, make sure they are doing their duty. But a householder has many other responsibilities. Also to take care of my older parents. That is also a householder's duty, to take care of the senior citizens in the community. The other duty of householder is to support religious and charitable organizations. So that is a part of the householder's duty, to support these charitable organizations, do charity, take care of himself, his family. Of course, you have to take care of your financial, responsibilities, make sure you have enough money for retirement and all that. But while I am working as a householder, I should still be doing some spiritual study, and I should also be doing some service. So householder is not only meant to acquire things for myself, but I have to share, because that is part of my duty, because society is maintained by householders. Students don't maintain society, they are studying, and then retired people also don't, because they are collecting social security and all. So it is in the householder stage, then when we pay taxes, when we maintain society. Then after age 50 or maybe 55 or 60, depending on your retirement age, you retire and you start withdrawing. What does that mean? That once I am a retired and say I'm a grandparent and so on, then I should not interfere too much in my children and grandchildren's activities. If I'm asked, for some help, I do it. If I can contribute to society, if I can do some service, if I can help, that is very good. That's why volunteer, because then you have more time. You don't have a job, and if you are financially stable, then you can serve society. But the idea is to vanaprastha, is to withdraw. Slowly your mind's attention should be turned away from the world and more towards God, because then I don't know how many more years I have to live, and none of us knows. So the point is that what I take from this world will only be my karmas, my actions, my good or bad actions are the only thing that will go with me. Once I die, then only thing I will take with me are my good or bad actions. So for the good actions I'll be rewarded, for the bad actions I'll be punished. So the goal of this is to withdraw slowly the mind's attention from the world of objects, emotions and thoughts, turn the mind's attention to the Lord who is within and without, and slowly, slowly withdraw. And in this stage, you should be doing more reading, more listening to the scriptures, listening to talks by wise people. So withdraw. And then the fourth one is called sannyasa. Sannyasa means renunciate. So a renunciate as described in our scriptures, is one who has given up the world, put on orange clothes. We see people with orange clothes or like the priest's habit, and does not have any personal possessions, does not have any, personal wealth. He may be either working for a mission or a church, and doing sermons and teaching and all. And they don't have any personal bank balance. They don't have a personal car or a plane or, everything. Basically, what is needed is provided by the organization. So the sannyasi is the one who has withdrawn from the world, has no attachments. He has given up his wife, not the wife, but generally the brother and sister and parents have been given up. And I am now living only for my spiritual growth. And there are some people who do it at an early age. You know, Buddha left when he was a young man. He left his wife and child and left the kingdom and became a monk, became a renunciate. So the idea is that when I sit for meditation, I should be a renunciate. I should be a monk. I should be a sadhu. I should be a renunciate. I should at that time have no wife, no husband, no child, no mother, no father. I should not be a doctor or an engineer. So otherwise I say, I'm a doctor, you know, I have half an hour to start my surgeries. Let me quickly meditate for 10 minutes and then I'll get dressed. And you know, at that moment, I'm not a physician. I am a seeker of truth. I'm not a husband or a wife. I'm not even a mother. You know, the children, if they have to do whatever the ones they have done and gone, then I sit. So at that moment, also, I am not this body, because people at the time of meditation, they're thinking, you know, after a meditation, what am I going to wear? You know, when I get dressed, what am I going to wear? Where am I going to go? None of those thoughts should come, because I am not this body. If I am not this body, then what am I going to wear should not even come in meditation. I am not this mind. So anything that disturbs the mind, at this moment, if I'm angry with somebody or somebody has said something, I should say, okay, I'll deal with it later. Instead of saying, you know, after meditation, I'm going to get on the phone and give her a piece of my mind, you know, for what she said. No, at that moment, I am, nothing disturbs me. So total detachment, atyashramastha. So the last ashrama. So what it means, every time I sit for meditation, I become a monk. Every time I sit for meditation, I'm a monk and I have nothing to do with the world. The world, as far as I'm concerned, for the next half hour, even if there's an earthquake or there is a, you know, tornado, or if the whole world is a nuclear war, let it be. For 30 minutes, I have nothing to do with this world. As far as I'm concerned, the world does not exist. Then they say, control all sense organs and organs of action. So like when I'm sitting for meditation, that's why I said you should not be walking, because walking is an organ of action. I should not be walking. My hand should not be moving. I should not. So either you put your hands on your knees or put it in your lap and can catch them so that your hands are not shaking at the time of meditation. And then obviously you should not have chewing gum in the mouth. You know, some people meditate with chewing gum in the mouth. Because they have chewing gum, we're doing everything. So why not during meditation? Or, so that's what I mean. So your mouth, you should not be speaking. I mean, you might be chanting some mantras and all, but you shouldn't be talking to people. You should not be. So your organs of action should be still. Hands, feet, mouth, speech and all. And also organs, the sense organs. So what does that mean? That means my eyes should be closed. Because if my eyes are open, then I can see everything. So the eyes should be closed. And when the eyes are closed, then most of the sensory input into the mind is reduced. When the eyes are closed, we all know that. And then I'm not eating anything. I'm not tasting anything. I'm sitting on a chair, but you know, I can't help that, because the touch I cannot help. Smell. Now, another thing that happens in meditation is you may smell something. Suppose there is coffee pot brewing in the kitchen. That is not, should not be done, because the moment you smell the coffee, then your mind goes out, you know, after meditation. Or maybe I should have had a cup of coffee before I sat, because I'm so sleepy. So don't have anything that will stimulate the nose and ear. Now that is another big problem, because when we sit for meditation, the neighbor's car goes out, you know, and he bangs the door in the driveway. Then he say, you know, John, why is he going to work so early? You know, you start worrying, you know, why is he is going to work? Why does it bother you? You are sitting for meditation. So the point is that A, it should be done early in the morning so that there is less noise from outside. And even if a noise comes, I have nothing to do with it. At this moment, unless there is a fire in the house, don't call me. You know, with that attitude, one should sit and have an attitude of detachment. Whatever sounds come, they don't concern me. Whatever thoughts come, you know, drop them. Do not hold on to the thoughts. Do not hold on to ideas. Do not hold on to concepts. And then the last one is to Bhaktya Swaguru Pranamya. Prostrate to the Guru. Before you sit for meditation, mentally prostrate to your Guru. If you say, if I don't have a Guru, then to the Lord. Because God ultimately is the ultimate Guru. Because whoever my Guru or whoever my teacher is, whatever knowledge he or she has, they have obtained from the Lord Himself. So if you believe in a particular form of the Lord, then bring that form in your mind, whether it's Jesus or Krishna or Shiva or Guru Nanak or whatever the form of the teacher or the form of the Lord. Mentally you prostrate because you need the Lord's grace and the Guru's blessings to be successful in meditation. So what we have done is we have basically tuned the body and the mind to make it ready for meditation. Like when you go for a concert, and what do you find? That, you know, that there is the violin and then there is the piano and the harp and all the different, you know, bass, all the stringed instruments, they're all tuned. So you will find that they are trying to tune them so that they all sound in unison. So after having tuned, then the music starts. Or same way when you go to an Indian concert, you know, we find that they will have sa, you know, playing, and then the musician will tune his or her voice and his or her instruments to that particular note. So now, having tuned the body and the mind, what we should meditate upon, what the music should come from that, will be next week. What is we meditate upon, whether it's the formless or the form. So today was just an introductory. Most of you are already meditating. It's very basic, but I thought it's there in the text. So I thought we'll just spend one class on just the preparatory for the meditation. And what is the attitude? That I am not this body. And at this moment, I am a sannyasi, I am a monk, I am a renunciate, I am a spiritual seeker. Any questions or comments?
They'll take it off somewhere else, but it's the process.
Right, that's what in the Gita, the teacher says in the 6th chapter. He says, your mind will again and again run out. If not into coffee, it will run out into my work or my business or my family or my back is hurting or, you know, something is itching. So the mind will run out, and as you run out, you bring it back. As it runs out, bring it back. And you can use cues like, you know, chanting the name of the Lord or chanting Om or watching the breath. So these are means to quieten the mind. And then when the mind runs out, again, you go back to chanting Om or observing your breath, and then bring it back and center it in the Lord's presence. So repeated practice, because in the 6th chapter, the student tells the teacher, after he has explained the technique of meditation and all this, he says, you know what, I find I can, he was a great warrior, Arjuna, you know, this the student. He said, I can control the winds. He had that much power. He said, but I find to control the mind is even more difficult than controlling the wind. And the teacher says, no doubt, it's true. Controlling the mind is very difficult, but with abhyasa and vairagya, with practice and with detachment. You have to repeatedly practice. That's why meditation is not learnt in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 3 months. It is a lifelong occupation. It takes years to become a good meditator. But that is for anything good, like to become a doctor. How many? It takes 25 or 30 years. You know, by the time you finish medical school and finish all the postgraduate, it takes 30 years. To become an engineer, it takes about 25, 27 years. To become a lawyer, it takes 27, 28 years. To start a new business, for it to be successful, it takes at least 10, 15 years. And while I'm doing the business, especially in the early stages, I make that my number one priority. So similarly, my spiritual growth should become a number one priority, just as important as my profession, as important as my family, as important as my duties, my responsibilities. So the most important duty and responsibility I have is to my spiritual growth. So when that commitment is there, then it is easy. It's like somebody has decided, I'm going to climb Mount Everest. and how many years it takes him, you know, the regular practice, and then he climbs some smaller hills, and then he does exercise, lifts weights to get in good shape. I had a friend who climbed Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa. He's a physician, good friend of mine. And for about 6 months to a year, he used to carry a heavy backpack, heavy shoes, and all the equipment, and go 10 flights of stairs, up and down, up and down. He would go 4, 5, 6 times every day, carrying a backpack, you know, because he has to practice. That's how, when he's climbing the mountain, he has to carry his backpack, his equipment, all his weight. So that much weight, he told me very clearly, he said for about a year, every day he would go 7 or 8 times up in his apartment building, up and down, carrying the weight. That's the only way you train, you know. Mm-hmm. So similarly, that is how you train your mind so that it becomes automatic.
So what is the purpose of, in the sense that in the morning, let's say 20 minutes you meditate, and then as soon as you finish meditation, you're back into the, you know,
right,
samsargi,
Well, somebody asked Swami Chinmayananda, how long should I meditate every day? He said, only 24 hours. So the point is that even though I am working in the world and doing my duty as a physician, as a mother, as a wife or whatever, a part of me should say that I am not the mother, I am not the physician, I am not a mother, but I am Brahman. I am that consciousness who at this moment is playing that role. And so part of your mind's attention should be centered on that. And then keep on doing your duties. And with practice it happens. Like I always say, when we are walking on the treadmill, that's a very good time because you have nothing else to do. So you become a witness and you say, I am watching the body. In my presence, this body is functioning. So the body is functioning, but I am the self or consciousness. And in my presence, this body is moving. So then the treadmill can become ready. Or when you go for a walk outside, you are walking. It doesn't require much mental. So at that, of course, when you're doing major surgery and all, then you cannot say, I am Brahman and I am trying to do surgery. At that moment, of course, then your whole attention should be on surgery. But when you're doing something mechanical, like washing the dishes or, you know, sweeping the floor, you don't need to think much. Then you say, at that time, I am Brahman. And at this moment, Brahman is sweeping the floor. So have that attitude as often as you can. And that's number one. Number two, how do you abide in that? By being the same in pairs of opposites. There will be joy, there will be sorrow, there will be success, there will be failure, there will be health, ill health, heat and cold. In all of them, I am the same. So if a person can remain balanced in the pairs of opposites and become aware of that, that life is not always going to be smooth. There are going to be problems, but the problems are to the body or to the mind or to the intellect. They are not to me because I am beyond all problems. I am that consciousness. So the more you practice that, then what happens is that world goes on. I still do my duty, but I am not affected by the world. World, I become kind of insulated from what the world can do to me. It does not mean that I don't care. In fact, a person who is spiritually evolved becomes more caring because he finds himself or herself connected with the world, and there's more love and you know, compassion. But for himself, he is able to detach from his himself or herself. Yes.
And it helps me.
No, that's true. Yeah, you can ask for help, and that's what that you should do every day before you leave your house. Oh Lord, work through me all day, be with me all day. But yeah, in a difficult situation, definitely that's good because that does give you strength. Because the Lord is working through us. See, we ask, where is God? But God is with me at all times. He's working through me, but we forget. So when you invoke the grace, definitely that helps. That is a very good, you know, attitude. And then after that, then you continue with full attention. That's what I meant. Your attention should be fully on the job.
Meditation is like 7.
Right.
So it starts with the yama and
niyama.
Asana.
Pranayama.
Yama, asana, and focus and concentration. So, does
everybody have to go through those steps to get to be able to meditate? I mean, it seems as though not everybody can meditate.
Right.
People who have a lot of worries and people who don't know where their next meal is coming from, they can't stop those
yes.
desires. So is the process the same? Do they have to go through those in a sense?
Well, I think the steps are connected. Steps are connected because the yama and niyama, there's a control of the body, mind, and control of my relationships with the world. That's yama and niyama. So obviously, if I'm too much attached to something or too much connected, then obviously meditation is difficult. So that's why they say at that moment, you control your body, you control your sense organs, and you reduce your attachment to people. And then asana and pranayama, if you do regular asanas and do some simple breathing, that helps to quieten the mind. So a quiet mind is good, but not necessarily everybody has to do the asana. Some people just get up and, you know, just relax the body, observe the breath, and they can meditate. Or some people chant the name of the Lord and they can meditate. But these are all helpful. And then there is dharana and pratyahar. Dharana means to resolve, and pratyahar is to withdraw. And we have said that you withdraw from the world, you renounce, and then you resolve that I am going to meditate. So resolve and withdrawal is very necessary. So these are the six steps, and then the seventh is meditation and eighth is samadhi. So these six steps help, and they are to some extent required. So it does not mean that you have to go through all seven steps every morning, but your attitude should be of a renunciate, your attitude should be of a calm mind, and so on. And then obviously, like you said, somebody doesn't know where the next meal is coming from or is homeless. For such a person, obviously, meditation is very difficult. Yes. No, you reduce your vasanas by, what is vasanas? Vasanas are, you know, my selfishness, my, you know, so you reduce them. You know, if I have some strong desires, so if I have a strong desire, say for, to eat something or drink something, or so obviously that my desire, but then when the Lord is working through me, then automatically I and mine become less. So you reduce I and mine and become he and him, you know, I'm his instrument, he's working, or she, whichever the form of the God you worship. So I am an instrument in that person's hand. Then I have no selfish desires, I have no personal agenda, I have no likes and dislikes. Whatever the Lord likes, that I'm going to do. So that's
the more we reduce our vasanas,
yes.
The more we are able to work the Lord God.
Exactly. Right. So as you reduce your vasanas, your selfish desires, that's why they say, no, thy will be done, not mine, not mine. Jesus always said that. So that means, oh Lord, only your will should prevail, not mine. So as you reduce that, as you reduce your vastness, automatically the purity of mind comes. Such a person is ready to meditate. Today maybe we can try chanting Om and see if that helps us to quieten the mind. Eyes closed. I am a seeker of truth. I am neither man nor woman, young or old. I am not a housewife or an engineer or a doctor. I am at this moment a seeker of truth. I have no responsibilities, no attachments, no duties. Only duty is my spiritual growth. And I have heard from my teacher that I am the spirit, I am not this body. I shall try to abide in that attitude for the next few minutes. relax the body from head to toe. Observe the breath. Chant Om 3 times loudly, where your neighbor can hear you. 3 times whisper, and then chant Om mentally. Times whisper, but only you can hear it. Keep on chanting Om mentally in your mind. Pay attention to the silence between the two Oms. Slowly let the silence lengthen and the chanting can slowly die down. And then just stay with the attitude that I am Brahman, I am the consciousness, I am not this body. The mind wanders, bring it back by observing the breath or chanting Om mentally.